Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes.
Hi, Jason. Delighted to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast with me today.
I'm happy to be here as well.
So, Jason, tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what do you do?
Well, currently hunkering down in Arlington, Virginia. I work as a director of development at the American Political Science Association. We do fundraising at the individual level and at the institutional level from government and private foundations. And just delighted to be on the show with you. I'm a big fan of your work.
How long you been in fundraising?
I've been in the field for about 8 years. Started as an intern, didn't really know what I would do, but I knew I liked working in the nonprofit space. I had a commitment to public service. And so I started as an intern. I had a general interest in grants and fundraising. And 8 years later, from what I've learned from mentors and various workshops I've attended, I've become a director of development.
So is this like your first professional stop in your career?
It is. Yeah, that's right. So I graduated college with a degree in political science, and I wasn't really sure how to apply it. And so it took me a couple of years to realize I was very interested in nonprofit work and policy. And while I was originally on the policy side and researching at think tanks, I kind of transitioned into fundraising after my first internship.
So what are we going to dive into today?
Well, you know, like many of us, we're kind of interested in how we're going to be fundraising in times such as COVID and others, and especially in the association world, where I'm mostly familiar with, our members get requests to support the organization from many different areas. They're asked to donate. They're asked to register for an annual conference, whether it's in person or virtual. They're asked to pay their annual dues. So, you know, I think now is a very interesting time to be a member of an association and to be fundraising at an association when members are asked to give a lot. And not all of that is charitable giving, but, you know, with all of that together, is now a good time to be asking. And, you know, I thought our discussion could really be about that. And of course, my answer is yes. And I'm sure you might say the same thing.
Yeah, let's sort of. I think, Jason, you may be the first guy. I'm trying to think back. I don't know that I've had a guest in 170 plus episodes that sort of has represented a sort of an association, but I certainly understand the. And you're certainly the first guest that I've had in the midst of sort of this current reality in the last 6 months with COVID and these other things. And I guess what I'm going to sort of hold back on sort of taking a position. I want to pull more out of you. But when your team is sitting around the table, sort of asking that question, sort of what are some of the ideas and opinions that sort of simmer at the top when you're asking the question as a team, should we be asking? And I've got some opinions about this, but I'll refrain until I get more out of you.
Sure. You know, I think association fundraising is very interesting. I think part of that is some might say it's a hard sell because maybe members don't view their professional association as your traditional charity, your traditional 501c3. When in reality, we're not much different from your local church or university. And so I think that's one interesting factor. The other is that, you know, I'm a member of the AFP, Association for Fundraising Professionals, and I'm lucky enough to have an employer that pays my annual dues. And so the other question is somebody whose employer is paying their annual dues, is that person someone who's engaged and willing to then donate their own money, even though their employer is paying their annual dues? And so with those two things at the top, I think it is a question of, is now a good time to ask? And is anyone really going to be interested in our case for support? As a matter of fact, today, I got an email from the AFP Foundation for Philanthropy asking for my support. Sure. And so I think the conventional wisdom is that, well, as an association, maybe we shouldn't ask because we're already asking members to pay for our conference, to join with annual dues. But my position is that it's imperative that fundraising is part of the traditional mix or stream of revenue that a nonprofit such as an association can take advantage of.
Yeah. So I guess the question we're sort of wrestling with, and I think it's a deeper question that I don't know enough of us in our profession are sort of willing to wrestle with. I think as I've sort of watched this, Jason, this question sort of come up routinely throughout the last 6 months or so with COVID sort of sitting on top of all of us, sort of looming over us in the spring and then sort of really settling down on us here in the summer months, and sort of becoming a part of our reality. I don't know that there's enough of us that are sort of wrestling with some of more of the more fundamental questions that sort of maybe precede this question, like, should we be asking? Like, the first thing I want to sort of push back on when somebody asks this question is it really a question of should, or is it actually a question of how? And maybe it's a question of who. For example, I'm not a member of AFP, and so I didn't get that appeal for the foundation. And so perhaps they are right in asking you because you are a member. And I think as it relates to nonprofits in general, I think we need to be, if we are asking, I think we need to be asking our current donors and certainly not trying to, I think it's in many ways a wasted effort or at least a very challenging effort if you're trying to acquire new donors. But in the case of the appeal that you got this morning in your inbox, you're a current donor. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I would certainly take that.
Yeah. And you know, another interesting aspect that I would want to mention is that, you know, foundation grants are certainly part of the mix of revenue streams for an association. And I think there's also the idea for an organization that maybe is concerned about working with their individual donors and asking for support, I think there is an idea that, well, foundations are there to be asked. They're waiting for us to contact them or to submit an application. So we want to focus just solely on foundation work, and we don't want to bother our individual donors, our individual members to support our association. And I think that is also a misconception. And I'm sure you're familiar with, and some of your listeners might be familiar with, the Giving USA statistics that are put out every year. And we know time and time again that although foundation and government support is very high, the vast majority of charitable giving comes from individuals. And so as an association, I do think that it's worth cultivating, and it could be a very small donor base, but that small donor base must be cultivated in addition to foundation grants as well. And even though some are in a tight financial situation, I think there are ways to continue doing that in light of the current circumstances that people are in.
See, those boxes, and I think you and I are on the same page here, but I think part of one of the mistakes I think we've made in fundraising is we sort of dehumanized who in some cases is actually giving us the money. And we've done that by saying, for example, we characterize things as foundations or corporations, or and then we characterize that like what you're pointing out with Giving USA, that large chunk of, you know, for the most part, comes from individuals. Well, in reality, every dollar that's ever given ultimately originates with the decision of a human being. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done ourselves a disservice in fundraising when we sort of hide behind the notion that some of this money, I think we hide behind it, but I think we're also comfortable with the idea, for example, in difficult times, we'd prefer to just put a proposal out to a corporation because we think that, you know, maybe corporations can handle perhaps the inappropriateness or the bad timing that we might be asking, but we certainly don't want to ask human beings, you know, all those individuals. Well, in fact, they're individuals at that company too. And that company is navigating the same world that we're all navigating.
Absolutely.
They're just doing it as a collective. So I think in some ways, I don't even know if that's the question we need to be asking. Mm-hmm. And Jason, I want to get back to your question about like say for example, your example with AFP, mm-hmm. whether or not you respond to that appeal today or not, and we're going to give you benefit of doubt, and we're going to say that you're going to send them your check. So I'm guessing that even in the midst of a time like now, they asked, so they're signaling to you that yes, they should be asking. I think the question we all need to be asking is, like when your association is sitting around the table and saying, should we be asking? What AFP is saying to you when they send out that appeal is that they're actually creating value for you now, even in the midst of COVID-19, when, say, you can't show up for a conference or something. Mm-hmm. They're signaling to you, we're still working, and we're still working on your behalf.
Absolutely.
And so you, in response, by sending your check, you're saying, I acknowledge that you're still working, and I believe that you're working on my behalf. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I've seen in other communications sent out by nonprofits. How are they adapting to current situation? What are they doing differently? And what are they doing to stay relevant in this time to make sure their constituents are still getting the support they need wherever they are around the world? And that's something that my association is looking at virtual ways or digital ways we can connect to show that as an association, we're still strong, we still provide value to our members, and that we're still a smart investment, not only as a member, but as a donor. And that is more important than ever, I think, right now, when we don't really have the ability to connect in person. And so what is it that we can do to connect with them in other ways? And I think, you know, some of your work on donors, keeping donors at arm's length versus developing that kind of relationship with them, that is also very key to finding out as a member of an association if they're interested in donating, because it's easy to look at your base of members and say, well, we're just going to blanket appeal all of them, and you know, because there are members and they're going to maybe be interested in our mission. But But as you would, I would think, argue is, you know, if we keep them at arm's length like that without getting to know them in a more profound personal way, finding out what motivates their interests, if it's beyond membership, if it's maybe philanthropic in some way, there needs to be an important relationship building aspect to that. But in times like now, it's very challenging. And I think that we need to be comfortable as a profession, as a fundraising profession, to connect virtually. And I think you're also seeing some of that happening currently as well, with people meeting on Zoom and other ways to connect. You know, it's just important to keep that going, no matter if we're working at home or at the office.
So, okay, so let's think about three gifts. I do this in my seminars, and let's use you as a so let's say, for instance, there's perhaps three possible gifts that you could give the AFP in response to that appeal. You give them $100, you can give them $500, you give them $1,000. And for you to make any one of those decisions is any one of those three gifts, for example, is a heightened level of commitment and intentionality, and perhaps a different prioritization of resources the closer you get to that thousand, or the closer you choose on the other end, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think, Jason, what I'm actually sort of wrestling with a lot of the people that I'm talking to these days, is that I think the donor, and I wrote about this earlier this week. I think the donor who sends in that $1,000 check, regardless of who they are, let's say you sent AFP a $1,000 check, I think you expect a personal thank you call in response for that gift. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about that earlier this week. And I think for a long time, fundraising has thought that it could get away with not making that personal thank you call for that $1,000 gift. And then let me talk about this. So that's the $1,000. I think that's the factor we need to think about with that $1,000 gift. I think the $100 gift is extremely hard to renew. I think there's a lot of people who are giving $100 gifts right now that when they do that, they signal just enough willingness to keep active in a database, but extremely hard to extremely difficult to renew. And so ultimately you get sort of trapped in this cycle of it would be very easy, for example, for you to send $100 to AFP, them to think that you're a viable, you know, donor for them to prospect with. They start appealing to you more often, and consequently you get irritated and ignore the jajibis out of them, right? And then to my $500 gift, I think it's the mixed signal gift, mm-hmm. that nonprofit organizations right now at this particular time in history, especially while we're sitting in the middle of COVID, that $500 gift is the question that we're all going to, like, you're sitting there with your team wrestling with, okay, do we pick up the phone like we would that $1,000 donor, or do we just keep it in an automated process and perhaps make it harder to renew it next year? Are you following what I'm thinking?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's an interesting question that you pose, or situation that you pose. And I got to say right off the bat that in terms of acknowledging our donors, I do think it's important that regardless of the amount, at least what I've helped our team adopt is thanking everyone, even if it's less than $10, because as I mentioned, some of our members, their employers paying their dues. And so some of them are not as connected to the mission as, you know, we would hope. So even those who are coming out with $10 or less, let's say, we will still try to make sure they know that they're money is being put towards important work in the same way that a $1,000 donation is.
So you're making a telephone call for $10?
We're definitely sending letters, signed letters to these individuals, and we're stewarding them in ways that we hope they will continue to deepen their relationship with the association. Because my other thought is, if you're committed to your profession, regardless of how little you're able to give during your lifetime, I've read some work on some studies in that these individuals are more likely to leave the association or the organization in their will. And so if they don't have money, let's say as an early career person who is a member of a professional association, we should start early and often that cultivation and stewardship, because during the lifetime or their career, it's going to get deeper with our organization, our relationship with them. And we want to make sure that philanthropy is top of mind when they start to think about their legacy. And so that's kind of what our team has adopted in terms of association giving.
Yeah. So talk to me about, so I get the $10 gift and I get the $1,000 gift or whatever your number is. But if you choose to, so we're talking about you, Jason, not your association. If you choose to make whatever is your, we'll call it middle of the range, whatever is the equivalent of your $500 gift, what is your expectation of AFP in response to that gift?
So
do you expect a telephone call, or do you expect what is your honest expectation?
So that's the thing. That's a good question. The more we give, the higher our expectations are. There's actually an interesting book that kind of discussed this. It slips my mind, but the more I give and the more I'm participating in the organization, the more I expect back.
And then frequently or the size of the gift, or either?
I'd say either. Because at some point I'm going to say, well, am I still getting that value in return? Am I being acknowledged, or is the association that I'm a member of doing more? And so as I give more, or as I give more frequently, I'm hoping that I'm going to be engaged more on their side. I'm hoping that I'm going to be getting a phone call, getting an email personally, not just a blast email. And to be honest, I'm hoping that they're paying attention to my past giving, because the email I got doesn't reference previous gifts I've made. So am I being cared for as a donor of significance or not? But as a member of an association, I think I should be. And I think we owe it to members of an association to show that, you know, we care that they are a member, and we ultimately want you to support our mission beyond your annual dues. And so what can we do to connect you in a philanthropic way and keep you involved?
See, and I think there's a flip side to this that we're not talking about in the fundraising space. Mm-hmm. And I just talked about this with another guest on my podcast. It's the idea that the fundraiser themselves has not developed a comfort level with that telephone call that I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. I think that telephone call is going to become on the back end of that gift. I think if you give that mid-range gift, that whatever your quote unquote $500 is, I think with greater regularity, the donor who gives $500 is going to expect, and if we want to renew them, we're going to need to pick up the phone. And I don't think enough of us in our fundraising seats know how to have that telephone conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that, so you go back to like what we were, I don't even remember exactly what we were supposed to talk about today, but I don't think the question right now, actually I do. I don't think the question right now is, should we be asking? It's can we actually steward that gift appropriately so as to ensure that that donor will give again within, say, the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. I think that's the question that we all need to be wrestling with, is you can ask as many times as you want to, but for every donor that actually responds in a meaningful way at that quote unquote $500 level, if you're not willing to pick up the phone and say, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, thank you, I think we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And then you look at, well, you know, if we have a member base of tens of thousands of people, but only a small percentage of that is actually donating, you have a good opportunity as an association fundraiser to really build connections with that small percentage of donors who have identified themselves as philanthropic or charitable or highly interested in your mission as a member. So there are opportunities, I think, to establish a tailored relationship with these people, a more personal relationship with these people. And then what happens after that call, right? What happens after the next gift? Is it another call? Or, you know, what kind of access do you provide a donor? You know, what is it that's going to encourage them to give beyond the $500 level? And I think one fundraiser that I listened to discussed something called mission gifts versus transformational gifts. So, you know, mission gifts are what you might look at as, you know, your $100, your $500 perhaps. But the transformational gift is what will take you above and beyond as an organization. And at that point, you know, is a phone call going to cut it to get somebody to that level if there's interest? Or is there going to be something that you need to do on top of that to get them on board? I think those are all very important questions, and but also more challenging now that you're not meeting sometimes in person with these people. We're working from home, and it's challenging to, as you and I know, it's challenging to get a quiet space to speak, considering, you know.
But in some ways, I think we're still, so the first time I saw this question get raised, should we be asking, right? It becomes, I think my reaction to it on social media when the question came up was this idea of discernment. And I think that's what, Jason, you're sort of getting at when you say these sort of these secondary questions, these follow-up questions that sort of continue, that linger on after you've made that first telephone call and said, thank you, Mr. Smith, for this, Mr. or Mrs. Smith, for this particular gift. I don't think that we have, as fundraisers, enough discernment to know that. And when I say discernment, I don't think we've had enough experience picking up the phone, making that thank you call, and then knowing that every additional time that that donor renews may not warrant that same level of follow-up as much as the critical importance of that first follow-up. That's what my experience has been. My experience has been that I can thank that person on the phone the first time, and perhaps the next three or four times I can thank via email, for example, just as easy. It's just that what that first phone call did is it acknowledged that person as a human being. Like, you're a human being. You sent me a gift that mattered to you. Now we're saying it matters to us. And, and,
because, you know, it's the first, that first time you connect, with a donor really sets the stage for how they feel about the future of your relationship. And I can tell you that I've donated to other organizations, and it's how they first treated me that is going to determine whether I donate again. And, you know, I can tell you, I haven't always been stewarded in a way that I've appreciated. But it's always, as you mentioned, that first call or that first outreach, that first letter. What can be done in that that makes that person feel like a human, not like you're reaching out to them and everything is automated and robotic and not personalized in nature? You know, so I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head with that.
So am I right that, so you know the three, I'm not asking you for your three numbers, but I think a lot, so I think AFP, they put out that appeal letter this morning for the foundation. I think it's very likely they're going to get a large number, a huge number. This is what we teach in my seminars as well. They're going to get a large number of those $100 gifts. And I don't think that the donors on the other side are going to be thinking about those gifts a whole lot. I think there's going to be, that's what I call a trivial gift. There's not a lot of thought going into those decisions. You're never going to tell the donor that's a trivial gift, but they're just not thinking about it. They're like sending in what they're supposed to. And I think that's what we get a lot on Giving Tuesday and stuff.
Sure.
But I think the impact of that gift is the same as like that $10 donor you're describing. I think we major too much in our thinking. Like, again, I'm going back to like you all are sitting as your team, you're sitting around that table thinking about your fundraising efforts and how you're going to acknowledge these gifts. I think that $10 gift you started with a few minutes ago actually becomes a distraction for us actually thinking more strategically about that middle gift that I'm talking mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many of those $10 gifts. Those $10 gifts come in huge volumes. And then there's this next category of, I've got a client I'm working with that we figured out that they've got this range of donors that sort of give in this sort of this first range of gifts that I'm talking about, somewhere in the range of 100 to say 250 to 500 bucks to up to about $5,000. Mm-hmm. And that $1,000, $1,500 donor is that donor that I think is signaling to them, hey, pick up the phone and perhaps even invite me to lunch because I can perhaps give you a little bit more if you'll cultivate the relationship. Mm-hmm. But what causes frustration for my client is that they've got so many of these $100 and $200 and $300 gifts that they similarly can't discern the difference between that first gift and that second one. Does that make sense to you?
It does. You know, I think a lot of that reminds me of, you know, donor psychology. What's, you know, is it meaningful? What's meaningful to the donor? And from an association standpoint, I also think part of that, whether you get a high percentage of contributions at the $100 range or less, and of course, very few at a higher level, I think some of that is also dependent on what field the association is representing and how long the association's been around, and are they do they have a culture that's conducive to generosity and gratitude and giving? So I imagine that in some associations, there are, you know, each organization has their own level that they think is appropriate to decide if it's a middle gift or a large contribution. But I also think that those at the lower level, they are reflecting, is a reflection of how they feel about the organization, or is a reflection of where they are in their career or something else. So I think as we're sitting around the table, there's a lot of factors to take in, and a lot of that is difficult to discern without having more data and more information on a personal level from those that we might have picked up the phone and had a conversation to find out, like, what exactly is the meaning of your contribution. So there are a lot of things that we could discuss at the table as for an association to sort of encourage their members to give beyond their dues.
Yeah, I have found so, and all of my work has been very donor facing work. And when I work on capital campaigns now, it's still very donor facing work. Mm-hmm. But I have found some creative ways to have that coffee table, lunch table type conversation to begin to sort of discern and perhaps data and technology and all the things that we're using these days to communicate with people is going to help us do this. But I think there's some creative ways to find that what that middle gift is, because I think that middle gift, what I call a meaningful gift in my seminar, is that gift that when you can find that donor, I think we get distracted by that smaller gift. It's smaller in terms of the relative experience in terms of their giving, not in terms of dollars. I'm talking about the giving experience, like you said, the psychology of giving. I think if we can discern that middle range gift, we can also begin to now identify the prospective donors that are worth and signaling to us, invest in me in more meaningful ways, and you can expect me to give in much more generous ways in the future. Mm-hmm. And I think the question is how do we balance what it is we can do as human beings, like you and I talking on this podcast, versus what can data and technology and automation and AI and those sorts of things.
Well, I would refer to that as what they say, the cold hand of technology. Right. I forget who had coined that phrase, but you know, when I think of that, I also think of that technology in that way? How impersonal is it? And are we really just lacking a human touch? Is it that simple? And it probably is.
So, Jason, we'll invite you back in 6 months, and we'll see what how AFP, the Association of Fundraising Professionals, sort of met up to the task. We'll find out if you did, in fact, respond, because at this point, it's still lingering in your inbox.
It's a cliffhanger. Yep.
Right. It's just So we'll invite you back. We'll ask you which gift you gave in A, B, or C, and we'll see how they if they stepped up to the challenge or not. In the meantime, Jason, if somebody's listened to our conversation and they're interested in reaching out to you, how would you suggest that they do that?
I'm happy to speak to anybody if they have more questions or would like to talk about giving in the association world. They can reach me by email, jason.sapia@gmail.com.
And Jason, you're also on LinkedIn, am I right?
I'm also on LinkedIn, and people can find me there. I'm happy to connect. I always enjoy connecting with others in the fundraising profession.
Good. I'll put a link in the show notes to your to both your email and there, and we'll put some information about your association as well. That would be great.
Absolutely, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. Thanks, Jason.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must-read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.